Let's call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 8:49 a.m. on Thursday, March 7th, 2016. Present, we have Representative Wilson, Representative Guerra, Representative Pruitt, Representative Kawasaki, Vice Chair Sadler, Co-Chair Thompson, Co-Chair Newman, Representative Munoz, it's a mouthful, Representative Gaddis, Representative Guttenberg, and Representative Edgman. We have a full committee.
All right.
Before we start, no electronic devices allowed in Finance Committee room. Turn off your cell phones. Okay.
But you can't know, sir.
Don't let them know. Take away the amusement.
On today's schedule, we have House Bill 259, Relocation Assistance for Federal Program Project. By House rules, by request of the governor, and under bills previously heard, we will be hearing House Bill 188, Person with Disability Savings Account. First, we will hear introduction to House Bill 259, Relocation Assistance for Federal Program / Project, by House Rules Committee. Here to introduce the bill is Mr. Mark Lucan, Commissioner of the Department of Transportation, and Ms. Heather Fair, the State Right-of-Way Chief. Please come forward, place yourselves on the record, and introduce the bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Mark Lucan, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And I have with me, as you mentioned, Ms. Heather Fair, who is our state right-of-way chief. Thank you for the opportunity to introduce House Bill 259. And the purpose of this bill is to bring Alaska statutes into compliance with federal law. When right-of-ways are acquired for public transportation purposes, federal law requires the department to compensate property owners for the value of the property and to provide relocation benefits to displaced families, businesses, and farms. Under the federal initiative known as MAP 21, which was the previous federal transportation bill passed in 2012, our federal funding partners have made it easier to qualify and increase the maximum relocation assistance available to these affected parties. Benefits paid to Alaskan families and businesses related to this program are eligible for federal reimbursement. Again, thank you for hearing this bill and considering its passage. We'll be happy to respond to any questions you might have at this time.
Questions from committee, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Commissioner. Commissioner, if the state can already accept federal funds without legislative approval, why do we need this bill?
I refer to my subject matter expert.
Good morning, Representative Newman. Heather Fair, statewide right-of-way chief for DOT, for the record. Your question is, why do we need this bill? Could you please elaborate a little bit?
Mr. Chair, my question was, Ms. Fair, my question was, if the state of Alaska can already accept federal funds without legislative approval for appropriation, why do we need this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Newman.
I'm assuming that you can already accept, so if the federal funding through MAP 21 allows this for federally highway-funded projects assistance, that money comes in already, I would expect. So,
Representative Newman, that's correct. We do already have authorization to accept federal funding. The reason for this bill is that our current statutes limit our ability to pay that funding to families and farms and businesses. There's a statutory limit that does not currently comply with the new federal maximums. So this bill is to bring us into compliance with the new federal maximums.
Mr. Chair.
And Newman.
Follow-up then. Well, could you explain the sideboards on that then? The maximum limits you could pay for, again, I'm assuming a piece of property when you have to relocate. Somebody, I've worked with the commissioner on this on quite a few projects with the expansions going on around the state. So if you're, can you give me the sideboards? What was the limit? What's the limit now? And I just want to learn more.
Certainly, Representative Newman, through the chair. The limits have been raised under the Moving Ahead for Progress 21 bill for federal highways. Under previous legislation by Congress, business reestablishment payments were only limited to $10,000. They're now $25,000 under the federal limits. Fixed payments in lieu of actual moving and reestablishment It used to be only $20,000, is now $40,000. Replacement housing for homeowners, the 90-day homeowner limit used to be 180 days that you had to own your home. Now it's 90 days. The limit used to be $22,500, and it's now $31,000. And the final increase was the replacement housing for tenants that are non-owners. Being a 90-day tenant used to be $5,250, and it's now $7,200.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner, then, again, because you're required to assist people who've been displaced probably through eminent domain, could be in road projects like that, this money is for those people who are displaced, have to move their home or business. Just trying to
Through the chair, Representative, that's correct. And I think it's really important to emphasize that this is purely the relocation assistance piece of that process, to help people when they're moving.
Representative Wilson, followed by Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in the fiscal note, it's zero, but it says it's going to be held in the capital program funding. Is all of this federal funding or some of this state funding?
Go ahead.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, you're correct that there is a portion of state funding that could be applicable, and that's when we get to the state share of roughly 9%. So it's very tiny. For whatever dollar that we're paying for relocation, the federal government participates roughly 91% of that. So our share is only about 9%.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Wilson.
So in the bill, it keeps talking about reasonable expenses necessary, and then it says reasonable, accessible to the person's place of employment. Is there a definition of reasonable? Because my reasonable might not be your reasonable.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, there are definitions in the federal regulations to which we are referring in this bill under Section 1.
Thank you.
Representative Munoz, followed by Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioner. Could you tell me how the department deals with businesses that have loss of business due to a transportation project? And do you have a reimbursement or any kind of policy to deal with that?
Yeah. Representative Munoz, through the chair, currently Alaska does not compensate for business losses, but we do compensate under federal law for relocation and for reestablishment of that business.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In states, originally when I saw this, I just saw the title and I thought it had to deal with emergencies or things like that. I didn't realize it had to do more with projects that are going on. In states that have adopted this rule, has it eased eminent domain takings, or is that the purpose of this?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, this is specific to relocations themselves, so aside from the acquisitions. But yes, in general, the purpose of this from Congress was to help assist families for relocation and businesses for reestablishment. Any type of a relocation can be very disruptive, and Congress recognized that prices have gone up, costs to relocate have increased, and it was time more than 20 years, almost 30 years, since they've increased the amounts that were available to eligible parties.
Yes, yes, Mr. Chair, I guess there's a bit of it's a substantive policy call, too, when we talk about eminent domain and federal road projects, and I just want the committee to be aware of it. Thanks.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Commissioner. I was involved with a project in my district where it was a widening of the road on existing right-of-way, on private property. Right-of-way was on private property. People had intentionally, knowingly built in the right-of-way. And DOT was more than willing to, in one case it was help move a garage, another place it was to replace a septic. Would these monies have been part of that? Is this an example of I mean, I always wondered. I mean, I know it was cheaper to just do those things for those folks than have a fight on your hands. Sometimes you do that analysis, so just take care of it. You know, the septic, all the equipment was there anyway, was in the right of way. The neighbors were not very friendly about those people complaining about it because they knew all along what the situation was. But is there a situation where somebody might be in a right of way and it has to be moved? Would that qualify under this program, or does? Because we're not changing qualifications, we're just changing limits. But I'm just wondering what the qualifications were or are.
Representative Gutenberg, through the chair, this bill does assist with some qualifications. It makes it a little bit easier by reducing the number of days that you have to be a homeowner or a tenant from 180 to 90 days. But to answer your question with regard to relocating examples you gave of a septic system or a garage, those tend to fall under acquisition, which this bill does not address. So relocation would be actually moving to another site.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard you talk about businesses and residents and tenants. Then you said farms. And so it... As the only farmer in the state legislature, it begs the question, A, is farming a business? So why would you mention farming independent of that? And I'm not trying to make a dig at farming. Sorry about that as well. But more importantly, was there a distinction that farms, and what is the distinction?
Representative Gaddis, through the chair, yes, there is a distinction in the federal law for farming. It's quite lengthy, but it is stated, and we do refer to that law in this new legislation. And I can tell you I'm a fellow farmer.
I guess, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess what I would like to hear is that we recognize that it's not just that bit of right-of-way that when you take through a farm, but then it doesn't allow you to farm potentially on either side. You can't get across. I mean, we've had some situations like that. I don't know if that's why farming is included versus, saying, gas stations or other businesses, if you will. I mean, why is farming a distinction over other businesses?
Representative Gaddis, through the chair. Congress, in their infinite wisdom, saw exactly what you're discussing here, that there are differences between farms and other businesses, sometimes dealing with the operations and sometimes with the income. This bill does not address that specifically. It more addresses relocation, so if we have to move a farm, for example.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say that there's a lot more to that conversation. But I would also say, if you will, thank you, Mr. Chair, but you could have a gas station and you could have a right-of-way down the middle and they would have to relocate, let's say, the parking lot or any business. So, I mean, I think the same things apply across the board, so I find that interesting, and it's certainly something that we could have a much longer conversation and I won't waste our time with. But I would like to talk to you about that. Thank you.
Are there further questions from committee? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having grown up on 40 acres, it never made a profit. I understand there's a big difference between farming and a successful business. But my question, Mr. Commissioner, is through the chair, just give me an idea of the number of people historically that have been displaced by federally assisted programs and estimate of the costs with any time frame you might.
I'll let your representative. All right. Fair answer. Yeah.
Representative Sadler, through the chair. Looking specifically to retroactive payments for those parties that were affected between the institution of MAP 21 in 2012 and its effective date in October 1st, 2014. There's just a handful of folks that have increased eligibility, and it's totaling approximately a state share of only $12,000 in retroactive payments. So, through an iterative design process, we try to minimize relocations as best we can, understanding how disruptive they can be.
And
to follow up, and
how many folks are you just kind of counting your fingers and toes, or need more?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, I'm referencing about a dozen total people that would be eligible for more money under this statute since that effective date. So it's a small number, but as you know, even one person that's affected can be a large consideration
for that person. Thank you.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to think on Section 3 dealing with business and moving expenses and not acquisition. I'm just trying to think of an example in Fairbanks because we've had a lot of road construction projects, some of which have been partially federally funded. Are there any of them that the Barnett Street Bridge was a big example, College Road where there was a lot of acquisitions along the right-of-way, University Avenue widening, which is coming. I know there were acquisitions, and I don't know if they were purely state or federal, but are those the kinds of things where a business would have moved? There was the veterinary clinic that was at the corner of Joy Elementary right there, right? So that got moved somewhere. I don't know. Is that an example of where moving expenses would be compensated above the $10,000 cap?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, those are very good examples. The veterinary clinic is one where we did assist in relocation, and it was outside of the window of this bill. It was prior to October 2014, but it would be an example where they would be eligible for potentially more in relocation, but not acquisition. Thank acquisition you. Is always market value or greater.
All right. Seeing no more questions, at this time I'm going to open House Bill 259 to public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 259? Seeing none, is there anybody online? There's nobody online and nobody in the room to testify on House Bill 259. At this time, I'll close public testimony. We're back to discussion. Representative Newman, a brief at ease. All right, we're back on the record. We have had public testimony and closed public testimony. Is there further discussion by committee? Any further comment by the bill sponsor?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to reemphasize that the whole intent of this bill is to bring us in compliance with federal law so that we are actually able to pay Alaska residents what they would be due in additional relocation benefits.
I don't see anybody that seems to have a problem with this bill. Can I have a motion at this time, Representative Newman, to move House Bill 259 from committee?
Sure, I think it's a good bill. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 259, version 29GH2709/A-alpha from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, we've moved House Bill 259 from committee. We'll do a brief at ease while we sign the documents. All right, we're back on the record. We'll now go to bills previously heard. House Bill 188, Person with Disability Savings Account, by Representative Sadler. We have a CS for this bill, version G. Representative Newman, can you please make a motion?
Chair, I move committee substitute for House Bill number 188, Finance Version 29LS0787/G, for committee referral and discussion.
Objections. We're addressing the CS. Mr. Anderson, would you please come to the table, put yourself on the record, and explain the differences between version I and the CS HB Finance version G?
For the record, my name is Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson. Mr. Chairman and committee members, before you is the CS HB 188 version G. There are four changes in the bill from the previous version. The first one is on page one of the old P version in the title. It was lines 2 and 3, and it deleted creating a limited property exemption for money in or paid from a financial account in the program for an individual with a disability. The second change is also in the old P version. It was on page 9, lines 2 through 8, and it deleted section 06-65260. It was the exemption for creditor claims, and it was which removes the exemption from the bill. The third change was also in the old version P, and it was on page 11, lines 20 through 12 in the old version P, and it deleted conforming language from subsection 11. And the final change was all other sections after the deletion were remunerated to reflect the new sections. Mr. Chairman, those are the changes from the old version.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Question for Mr. Anderson?
Could you repeat the first change, please? I didn't.
Yes, through the chair, Representative, that was a title change which deleted the sections referencing the exemption. So it was on the old version. It was lines 2 through 3 on page 1.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Okay, we're back to the bill. And is there any further questions from committee on the bill? Okay, before we go to physical notes, would the sponsor like to have further comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Dan Sadler, House District 13. Mr. Chair, there were a couple of questions that were raised in the earlier meetings. I just wanted to have the chance to put the answers on record. There was a question about whether there was a need for the funds in an ABLE account to be protected from creditors. And as you can see in the CS before you, we have deleted that section that provides that protection against creditors in state law, including child support orders. So there is no inhibition from that section to prevent a creditor from going after the amount of funds in an account. The question was, why was there not a zero fiscal note from the Department of Health and Social Services? The department has consulted with revenue, and we now have a zero fiscal note from Health and Social Services, reflecting the minimal cost to implement the bill that can be covered by their existing budget. There was some discussion about what level of disability qualifies a person to open an ABLE account and how that disability is determined. And the answer to that is a person must either be eligible for supplemental security income or meet that same standard. And the standard says, you must meet the disability standard for children claiming benefits under the Supplemental Security Income Program based on disability, which means they must have marked and severe functional limitations. And the certification of those limitations must include a copy of the individual's diagnosis relating to that individual's relative impairments, and it must be signed by a licensed physician under the penalty of perjury. There was a question as to how you can be sure a person is using their ABLE account for the appropriate expenses. And the answer to that is they must file the appropriate paperwork with the IRS to document not only their deposits like you would for an IRS or for a 529 account, but also the disbursements from an ABLE account. So they're accountable to the IRS for telling the truth. If someone lies on their tax return, they'll be subject to the same penalty that put Al Capone in jail. And finally, the question was, what level of precedence does the state have in recovering Medicaid expenses from an ABLE account? Short answer is they're fifth, but the order of precedent for a person's estate is first, their estate goes to pay the costs and expenses of administration of the estate. Second, the reasonable funeral expenses. Third, debts and taxes with a federal preference for child support past due payments. Fourth is reasonable and necessary medical expenses of the last illness of the person who died. And fifth is debts and taxes with preference, which is, includes Medicaid payments. So they're fifth. And sixth is all of the claims. And if there is any money remaining, it would go to the person's estate to be disposed of either by will or through the probate court process. Mr. Chairman, those are my answers. I hope those are sufficient to answer the members' questions. Thank you.
Are there comment or questions from the committee? Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say it's been great to work with the bill sponsor. You did a great job. I'm really impressed. I think that the bill is better today than it was yesterday, and I thought it was pretty good yesterday. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Representative Gaddis, I appreciate the thoroughness of the committee process. I think this is what makes legislation better. Thank you.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Representative Sadler, for bringing this forward. Just one question on the fiscal note. Part of the ABLE Act is to the effect is that it shields assets that are within the account for purposes of Medicaid and other programs. Won't that have a fiscal impact if it's no longer considered an asset of the individual?
Through the Chair, Representative Kawasaki, actually, no, Medicaid is not a means tested except for the original qualification. No, the means testing is for primary for supplemental security income. So, no, we asked every question we could of DHSS about what possible expenses, and they came back with a zero, so I'll assume no.
And through the Chair. And then that includes other programs the state has specifically for this for this group that also have asset tests?
I suspect so, yes. Through the Chair, yes.
Okay.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. Just one, there will be a certain number of additional people who qualify for Medicaid, which I think is appropriate. But I hope next year we don't have to make additional cuts to make up for this. It's just these are folks who deserve treatment. So do you have a view on that?
Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, my understanding is this, I don't really see how this is going to add to the categories of people who qualify for Medicaid. Medicaid is an income-based thing. This is it gets in that chasing its tail. I don't see it adding a whole bunch of people to Medicaid, no.
Through the Chair. But we're going to shield assets from being counted, which I think is completely fine. I think some people will qualify for Medicaid who aren't right now. No?
Call Lifeline.
Ms. Skipper, if you place yourself on the record.
Hi, my name is Kim Skipper, staff to Representative Sadler. Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, this bill is intended for disabled people, and they could be on Medicaid and they could be on Social Security income. So I don't think that, I'm not saying what you're saying is that's going to add more people to the Medicaid. I think it's just enables those people that are in that condition to be able to save money.
I will through the Chair, Representative Guerra, again, consider these are people who are disabled and often do not have income, so I just don't think there's going to be a whole bunch of folks who are going to be working, earning income, and having this account sheltering income. You know, this is to shelter their income from interest on an account. And even if you consider what 2%, 5% is on $14,000 a year, that's not much of an income. That's not going to move the needle too much.
Through the Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thanks. No need to go into that. If it does qualify more people, so be it. I think this is a group of people that needs help. If it does, I just don't want to have to see an additional reduction to offset it next year. The other thing is, I guess I'm not clear on it, and I just want to know your position. Did the prior version to this version change so that these folks were protected from creditors in these accounts and now they're not? Is that a change in the bill? And if it is that something you're comfortable with and why?
Yes. Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, that is correct. The change in the bill from the previous CS to this CS does remove those protections. I'm comfortable with that primarily because I don't see much of a risk of someone going bankrupt. There is a request, interest and concern expressed about people that might potentially seek to abuse this account. I frankly did not see much of a risk, but was willing to remove that protection because I didn't think it was that effective in the first place. There was not much of a hazard to protect against.
Thanks.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. And I'm the one who had the question about whether or not there's more people in Medicaid, but the definition yesterday was much different than the definition today. And to be on Social Security disability, you already, because of that in itself, can go into Medicaid. Also, I'm in favor of this bill because I know folks who have wanted to get part-time jobs, and the way Social Security works, they take $2 away from you for every dollar you make. Well, that's not a very big incentive. Not just that, you just can't afford it. I mean, you're already on a really limited income. So any extra income you can get is a benefit, and this now will allow folks to be able to go out, get a job, and not get penalized for that. And people should always have that opportunity. So, you know, I really appreciate that part of it and also the creditor. But the better definition makes me feel more comfortable because just to have a diagnosis, I think, would have opened up a huge door way. But this limited one, they already qualify for Medicaid, and they would already be on there. So I'm comfortable with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, Representative Newman, can you walk us through the fiscal notes?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. The first fiscal note is from the Department of Revenue. It's appropriation from the tax and treasury allocation, treasury OMB component number 121 from Mental Health Trust, fund source 1092, and then a zero fiscal note from the Department of Health and Social Services appropriation Medicaid services for an allocation to the Healthcare Medicaid Services OMB component number 2077.
Any questions on the fiscal notes? Can I have a motion to move House Bill 188, version G, from committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I make a motion to move committee substitute for House Bill number 188, finance, version 29LS0787-Z, from the House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Any objections? Seeing no objection, House Bill 188 is advanced out of committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much
to
you.
That was not gabbling out, by the way. Okay, the next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for today, Thursday, at 1:30 p.m., and at this time we will hear House Bill 230, naming Arctic Man Way, and House Bill 237, Interstate Medical Licensure Compact. And make sure we sign the documents before we leave, and with that, we are adjourned.